From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Randall White. In today for Beth Ruyak, last year was the deadliest for inmates housed in the Fresno County Jail, at least in two decades. That was the Sacramento Bee's top story this past Sunday. It's the first report in the Bee's 2019 series examining overcrowding, resource issues, and the treatment of inmates in California jails. The series is a partnership with ProPublica. In early 2013, Governor Jerry Brown declared the state's prison problems solved.
There's no question that there were big problems in California prisons. Overcrowding, lack of health care, lack of mental health care, and lots of other problems. But after decades of work, the job is now complete.
That statement you just heard was nearly 2 years after the U.S. Supreme Court mandated the state reduce its prison population by about 40,000 inmates. Joining us in studio to talk about his reporting on this story is the Sacramento Bee's Jason Pohl. Welcome to Insight, Jason. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And we were discussing a little bit prior to the show about how much time went into just this one first story in this series. In some ways, this story, not your reporting, but the story itself, began in 2011 with that U.S. Supreme Court ruling we talked about mandating California reduce its prison population. Can you give us the background on this?
Sure. So to understand where this reporting starts, you do have to go back to 2011 and the realignment decisions that were in large part spurred by California's radically overcrowded and dangerous prisons. So at the time, leading up to probably the 10 or 15 years leading up to realignment, the state had been sued by numerous groups that were alleging the crowding situation was not just dangerous, but unconstitutional.
What kind of overcrowding were we seeing?
So there was images that circulated at the time of, maybe you saw these, inmates were being housed in gymnasiums, just stacked in bunk beds. They were being put in medical wards, just anywhere there's a space to put a bed or even under a bed. Like, they were trying to find anywhere they could put these people.
So the U.S. Supreme Court said you got to do something, and the state started to do that.
Exactly. To kind of back up just a second, in 2009, a three-judge panel said, California, you have to do something. California appealed that. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court in 2011 said, yes, in fact, you do still have to do something. So at that same time, California was doing something. They were having these conversations about how do we decrease the prison population? How do we actually go about proactively getting ahead of this? And so right about the same time the Supreme Court decision came down, California was actively engaged in conversations about AB 109, also known as realignment.
And so was the realignment factor to move some of the prisoners from state prisons to county jails?
Yeah, so the way that we kind of think about this, and a few people have described it this way to me, is it's not like state prisons opened up the back door and let prisoners out early. What they did more of was they closed one of the front doors and made it more difficult for people to go there in the first place. So every month, there's thousands of state prisoners that are released because their sentence is up, right? Their term has ended, and it's time for them to go back to the community, either on parole or whatever the case might be. It just allowed that process to continue, but then made anybody who maybe had a technical parole violation not get sent right back to prison. It also factored in these things called triple nons, nonviolent, non-serious, non-sexual offenders. Instead of those people being sent to state prison like they might have been and taking up more space in the state prisons, those people were instead sentenced to county jails.
And at the time, did people see this in an optimistic way?
It was the best option available at the time. A lot of the news clips that we looked at in the course of our reporting were sort of championing this as not just a way to deal with a court order, but a truly progressive way in dealing with mass incarceration in California. And it continues to be viewed that way. I mean, it shouldn't be lost that this was one of the most significant prison downsizing movements in U.S. history. However, it's shifted many responsibilities, in some cases burdens, to county jails.
And that's where your story picks up, right, in Fresno. Tell us a little bit about the inmates that you discuss and their families.
Sure. So in the course of our reporting, we knew that we wanted to examine how have realities changed in California's county jails. we didn't know exactly where we wanted to start. We didn't know exactly how we wanted to look at that. But the logical place to begin looking is in-custody deaths. The State Department of Justice collects basic details on in-custody deaths in correctional facilities and jails across the state. And after my reporting partner, Ryan Gabrielson, and I began looking at this, we started to find that some counties had a much more significant number of in-custody deaths after realignment than other counties. And atop that list was Fresno County. Fresno, in the 7 years before 2011's realignment, had 23 in-custody deaths. And the 7 years since, that number more than doubled to 47. And so that was sort of raising some alarm bells in our minds of something's going on there. We need to go look there first.
And when you found one, you started to find more problems associated with the booking process? Or
so in Fresno specifically, it's sort of a difficult case study because there's so much history behind it. So Fresno has been sued in the past, and it's been sued for overcrowding. It's been sued for how inmates were treated or not treated for mental illnesses and things of that sort. And it's also had to deal with some other repercussions related to the Great Recession. So closing jail floors and trying to figure out ways to manage this changing dynamic. But in Fresno, what we found was there was, and this was well documented by the Fresno Bee, another one of our partner publications, last year, an in-custody death where an inmate, Lorenzo Herrera, was actually murdered in a jail cell.
And that was the first one you looked into.
And that was the first one we began looking into. And in that case, even a year later, nobody's been charged for that. And in fact, the investigation's ongoing. And to the best of our knowledge, there's no clear indicator of who's responsible for that death.
What's the family saying?
The family is suing the sheriff's office, saying not just that their son was wrongfully killed, right? It was a wrongful death lawsuit.
Because he was doing everything he could to stay safe, right? He was trying to read books and magazines and those sorts of things.
Yeah, the way that his father, Carlos, told us, he basically said, you know, Lorenzo, take care of yourself. Don't trust anybody. We're going to get you through this. We're going to figure it out. And, I talked to Carlos again a couple weeks ago, and he told me that still there's been no update in the investigation into his son's murder.
And when you were looking into Lorenzo Herrera's situation, you found another inmate that was booked the same day.
That's right. So one of the things that early in the reporting process we did was we requested notices of claim filed to counties across the state, and that being sort of the precursor to any sort of lawsuit. And in that document that we got back from Fresno County, of course, it says when an incident occurred. And in the date field, it kind of matched up with what we knew to be true with Lorenzo Herrera's case. And this was the case of Ernest Brock, a young man who was arrested and survived less than 72 hours inside the jail before his apparently psychotic cellmate attacked him and put him in a coma.
These deaths that you're looking into, the spike in deaths, specifically in Fresno County, are primarily inmate on inmate, or there are also inmate health issues that aren't appropriately addressed?
Exactly. It's both. And what we saw last year was sort of surprising, at least in the course of our reporting, is in, for example, the 2 months that Lorenzo Herrera was in Fresno County's custody, there were more attacks, inmate on inmate attacks, that resulted in multiple day hospitalizations than the entire preceding year. So that's some perspective about how volatile this situation can be and how difficult it can be to not just serve time in a county jail now, especially in Fresno, but also be a correctional officer in the Fresno County Jail. And on the other side of the coin, it also has to deal with access to health treatment. So the third individual that we discuss in the story, Andre Erkins, he was arrested again in January 2018, within about 48 hours of the previous two individuals I mentioned. And he was arrested because 5 years earlier, he missed a court date for a case where he stole a purse. He took a purse out of someone's shopping cart. did some jail time, was supposed to, after he was released from jail, check in with his probation officer, everything else. He didn't do that, went on living his life, became the father of two young children, and was trying to get his life on track. He got pulled over for a traffic stop, and the warrant popped up from 5 years earlier. So he goes to jail, and he really looked at it as a chance to redeem himself, to clear his record and to get back on track. Well, that didn't quite happen because about a month into his time in the Fresno County Jail, he began suffering what was later described as symptoms from cardiac disease. He had heart issues, and for some 10 hours, his condition worsened. And as one of his bunkmates told us, he was vomiting for hours. He couldn't really speak. His lips were turning blue. And finally, correctional officers noticed and took him to the hospital, and that's where he died.
You mentioned in the Herrera case, where that lawsuit stands is sort of stalled, unclear. Have you seen cases that get resolution?
In Fresno specifically, there was a case that came about in 2011 that, if you fast forward 4 years to 2015, did get resolution in the form of a settlement and consent decree. So these consent decrees are sort of agreements between the counties and the lawyers who are suing them, basically to say, we're going to make things better. Here's what we're going to do to make this case settle out. In addition to any potential monetary payments that we'll pay out, we're going to do X, Y, and Z to improve conditions in our jail.
And is that because the family is asking for that, or are in most of these cases, the family wants some sort of monetary settlement?
I mean, it's a mixed bag, I think. In both of the cases that are in lawsuits right now that we talk about in the story, those families say they just want justice. They just want this to not happen to anybody else again.
Fix the system.
Exactly.
We're speaking with Jason Pohl from the Sacramento Bee about his reporting on California county jails. You may have caught it this past Sunday. It was your number one story, and I imagine your reporting going forward is going to have the same sort of track record. So this realignment that we discussed came about after several years of recession and a drop in tax revenues at the county level. And so I imagine that had some effect on the ability of these county jails to take on the excess prisoners that they weren't used to housing.
That's right. The timing of this in some ways was just awful, right? I mean, think about an increasing amount of responsibility to counties across the state, not just a few counties, but every county. In theory, dealing with not just an increasing number of people, but an increasingly complex jail population, whether it be in terms of housing for longer periods of time or health needs, things like that. County jails are reliant on county tax bases. If tax revenue dries up, if people aren't making big purchases, it stands to reason that you're going to see less money being able to go toward the jails. And in fact, in Fresno, that resulted in the closure of several jail floors and the laying off of several correctional officers because the money wasn't there. As Sheriff Margaret Mims told us, that was the most painful moment of, or one of the most painful moments of her time as the elected sheriff in Fresno. And to counter that, what the state did is they allocated billions of dollars that states can vie for to basically deal with
the
this
counties,
changing population.
Counties can.
Exactly, yeah. That counties can vie for dealing with these increasing responsibilities.
And are we seeing any measurable change based on that?
And it's sort of early to tell, and I think the course of our reporting for the next several months will bear this out a little bit more. But, you know, not all counties have seen the same rise in deaths, and not all counties spend their funds in the same ways. So there's sort of two different sides of the spectrum, if you will. You can spend your millions of dollars that you as a county get each year on enforcement and sort of doing things the way that they've been done before, or you can spend it more on rehabilitation and programming and really ramping up your probation services and things of that sort. Most counties do a mixed bag of the two, but some definitely lean one way and some definitely lean another.
In many of the cases that you looked into, is it simply a case of keeping nonviolent offenders separated from potentially violent or psychotic ones?
Do you mean in the case of like how they're housed inside how jails?
Right, exactly.
It's mixed. And in a lot of these counties, they don't have the space to separate, you know, violent, nonviolent, sexual, non-sexual, young, old, sentenced, pre-sentenced, you know, all of these. So it's oftentimes very much mixed. And that's how you end up getting people who are serving long-term sentences or who have been to prison before and now they're serving another sentence in a county jail, sitting next to a guy who's in for a more minor violation of the law.
As a journalist, I really want to encourage people to read this piece and the ones yet to come, because this level of reporting doesn't get financed all that often. We don't see reporters that get to spend an entire year on something. As you mentioned, we were talking about that before we went on the air. How did this all come about? So it's the McClatchy Group, right? Which is five papers?
Yes.
Plus ProPublica. So give us a little insight into how this is all going forward.
Sure. So last year, our SACB bureau chief, Adam Ashton, put in a grant request for the ProPublica Local Reporting Network. Essentially, ProPublica National, which does some fantastic investigative reporting that many of us look to as sort of inspiration in our own work, they finance about a dozen local investigative reporting projects throughout the year across the country. And that means that the reporters there get to spend that year digging into something, whether it's related to criminal justice or state politics or local police corruption, whatever it might be.
Again, it's happened to all of us where you're working on a story and then you find something more, but your time on that story is done.
Exactly, right. Exactly. And so after the Sacramento Bee got this grant from ProPublica, it basically freed up a spot. And that's where I kind of stepped in and was given the great opportunity to spend time reporting on this. And in the course of our reporting going forward, we have a number of stories that we're excited to share, at least just based on our preliminary reporting. I mean, it's fascinating what you find when you turn over the last page of a stack of documents or, you know, make that extra phone call that you have the time to make. It's something that, you know, in my years of reporting, I've never really had the opportunity to. And so I'm very fortunate to have that.
And on that note, Jason, your focus this time around was Fresno. Give us a sense of what we might see going forward.
One of the things that we mention in the first story is this issue of inmate-on-inmate violence, in particular in the Central Valley. So I think the number that we use in the Central Valley line in the story is inmate-on-inmate homicides tripled, and suicides are up 23%. Now, death is only one part of our series, but it's one of the most visible things that we can start understanding, and it says a lot about how else issues might be rising within jails. So that's one thing that we're going to be looking at. But then, I mean, there's all these other avenues that we want to go down, that we plan to go down, that are so important, whether it be regarding mental health treatment in county jails, or whether it be with, you know, all these billions of taxpayer dollars that are being spent to deal with some of these issues. Or just in general, what's the oversight mechanism for this increasingly changed criminal justice system in California?
And what is the oversight? Like, who do the county jails answer to?
The Board of State and Community Corrections is the group at the state that's tasked with doing inspections and sort of writing the rules, if you will. Actually, county civil grand juries that go in and do these inspections of various aspects of county government also have some oversight. But one of the things that we're looking at is, you know, where else is that oversight? How do other states do it? And you know, where, as California is continually looked at as this progressive place where criminal justice reform is taking root, you know, where are there avenues to potentially bolster oversight and make sure things are being done right, or maybe look to other states to see what's been done in the past?
And are there county jails that are doing it right post-realignment that can serve as an example to other jails like Fresno?
I would be hesitant to say that just quite yet, but there are some areas where deaths have not gone up at all, or in fact have gone down. And for perspective, Los Angeles County, for example, which has been subject to numerous other reforms. I mean, they're their own planet, and they have their own orbit down there. When you just think about the size of the jail system and the amount of issues that have been raised before, but deaths are down there. And to use an example in San Francisco County, for example, the deaths are also down there. So obviously there's much to be looked at when it comes to programming and other things that go into this, but there are places that seem to be doing better than others.
What are you hoping readers take away from reading this story, from learning about the dangerous conditions in these jails?
Well, like you and I were talking about before we went on the air, there's anybody can end up in a county jail. There's this perception among some people that anybody who's in a county jail deserves to be there. I mean, we all hear these comments and things like that, but it's really important to remember that roughly two-thirds of the people in county jails across California and across the country are being held pretrial, meaning they have not been convicted of the crime that they're there for, right? And in our system where you're innocent until proven guilty, you know, that's something that I think people should also keep in mind. But then also, we're all paying for this. We're all county taxpayers. We all pay to keep the jail running. We all pay for the lawsuits. We all pay for the dollars that are going toward the state that are then being reshuffled toward the counties. So it's really important that I think people take away from this series how directly issues in county jails do affect them or might affect them in the future.
Since publication on Sunday, have you heard from Fresno County Jail or the county itself?
We haven't heard any follow-up from the county. We have heard from several other people. They've expressed their thanks for us for doing the story. I mean, you know, county jails have historically been overlooked considering the size and scope of issues in the state prisons. So it's been positive.
Well, thank you for your reporting work. And thank you for being here on Insight to share it. I hope when subsequent stories come out, we can have you back and get a little update from you regarding the course of your reporting. That is Jason Pohl from the Sacramento Bee. He has been reporting on the condition at California County Jails post realignment. As always, you can learn more at capradio.org/insight. Thanks again, Jason. You are listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.